welcome to Change Surfer Radio. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of our radically democratic future.
Today's show is going to be about brains. I'm going to start with a study that was presented at the April meetings of the American Academy of Neurology. This study was done on monkeys, and it suggests that injections of genetically engineered cells can repair damaged brains. Normal aging in monkey brains causes a 28% decline in neurons. We know this because we can more easily cut open monkey brains, at least under current law, and study them. But researchers from the University of California in San Diego reversed this decline by engineering neurons to produce nerve growth factor. The therapy will have immediate applications in the treatment of Alzheimer's disease, which affects types of neurons that are especially responsive to this therapy. The next stage will be to determine ways of using the therapy as a prophylactic against mental decline. Another similar research reported in Discover.com, which is the Discover magazine online, another research that uses the chemical triggers in the brain. Dr. Sam David, a neuroscientist at McGill University in Montreal, Quebec, has developed a vaccine that causes the immune system to tag inhibitor molecules as foreign and defend against them. Now, the inhibitor molecules are the chemical triggers that normally inhibit neural regeneration. More than half of mice that are immunized with these inhibitor molecules regenerated severed spinal cord nerves and regained lost reflexes. There are several hurdles before this therapy can be tried on humans. For one, the activated immune system might also attack healthy cells in the spinal cord. David plans to focus the vaccine so that it targets only the inhibitor molecules and not the myelin itself. He's optimistic about the prospects. Using this approach, we are able to see remarkable growth and regeneration, more than that has been reported so far. And Yale researchers have discovered another method for triggering neuronal regeneration. They published a paper, Pasco Rakic and his colleagues have published a paper in Science, showing that the mechanism by which the brain turns off growth, another chemical mechanism called notch signaling, can also be chemically reversed. Notch signaling allows the adolescent brain to stop growing and to begin stably storing long-term memories. By inhibiting notch activity in mature neurons, the team was able to reverse the state of stability and reinitiate neuron growth in the brain. Notch signaling may also be involved in progression of degenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's. And finally, another vaccine. Researchers from Thomas Jefferson University, reporting in the journal Science, report that a vaccine given to rats caused their immune system to develop antibodies that prevented the action of another protein, of the same protein that causes damage from brain injury. This oral vaccine will hopefully protect brain neurons. Now, the other research on vaccine was to regenerate spinal growth against the inhibitor molecules. This is an oral vaccine that will protect brain neurons from damage from epileptic seizures and strokes. The vaccine prompts the body to make antibodies to block the NMDA receptor that has been shown to aggravate brain damage after a stroke and to play a role in epileptic seizures. So people who were prone to strokes or epilepsy could be vaccinated against brain damage. Good news for the herbs and supplements industry, especially since they funded this research. Research presented at the British Psychological Association Conference in Winchester, England, has shown that just one dose of ginkgo biloba and ginseng can speed up reaction time, increase attention, and improve memory and concentration. Dr. Andrew Scully, a psychopharmacologist, now that's the career I should have chosen, psychopharmacology, at the University of Northumbria, whose research was sponsored by Pharmatin Natural Health Products, that it is not known what effects sustained use of the herbal remedies would have. But both herbs are extremely popular, and other research has documented ginkgo biloba's benefits as an Alzheimer's therapy. The ginkgo speeded attention, whereas the ginseng seems to have improved memory, the storage and retention of information, and the ability to concentrate. The most effective dose of ginkgo was 360 milligrams, which is the standard dose. When people were given ginkgo biloba at 9 o'clock in the morning, the reaction times were still faster at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The experiments with ginseng showed a single 400 milligram dose improved ability to store, hold, and retrieve information. Now, from chemical therapies to non-chemical therapies, evidence continues to grow that attention deficit activity disorder, ADHD or ADD, has a neurophysiological basis and is effectively treated with Ritalin and other stimulants. But concern is also growing that many children are being sloppily diagnosed and over-medicated. Now, there may be an effective non-chemical approach to the treatment of ADD, ADHD. In an article published last year in Applied Psychophysiology and Biofeedback, Linda Thompson, a psychologist who runs the ADD Center near Toronto, reported on the results from 111 people, most of them children, who went through 40 sessions of neurofeedback at her center, what used to be called biofeedback. She reported that 30% of the children were taking medications like Ritalin when they started the program, but that number had dropped to 6% by the end of the sessions. The neurofeedback sessions consisted of training participants to produce more attentive, awake brainwave patterns as their EEGs were monitored by a computer. People with ADD tend to produce an abundance of slow brainwaves and show less fast wave activity. Slow waves are associated with being daydreamy, tuned out, and distracted. Fast waves are indicative of being calm, alert, focused, and thinking intensely. A comparison of before and after results showed a decrease in slow wave activity, a drop in inattentiveness and impulsivity as measured by an objective test, and a 12-point increase on average in IQ score. Now, neurofeedback and meditation make excellent sense as cognitive enhancement aids since stress is related to distraction and memory loss. Researchers at the University of Zurich in Switzerland and colleagues at the University of California in Irvine, publishing in the journal Nature Neuroscience, have found that when volunteers were given cortisol, a hormone released during stress, they were less able to remember things that they had recently learned. The research shows why we forget things that we learn when cramming, and why the testimony of people under stressful conditions, about stressful conditions that they faced, such as when they are being victimized, should be taken with a grain of salt. Cortisol tablets did not impair immediate recall, but they were less able to remember things the next day. The stress chemicals interfered with the consolidation and retrieval of memory. Another way to reset the wetware, dump the detritus of a day of work and mental application failures, and load a fresh system is sleep. Experiments described in the March issue of the Journal of Cognitive Neuroscience show that when people learn a new skill, their performance does not improve until after they've had more than 6, and preferably 8, hours of sleep. Without adequate sleep, researchers say, skills and even new factual information may not get properly encoded in the memory's brain circuits. Moreover, a person's intelligence may be less important than a good night's sleep in forming many kinds of memories. The researchers trained Harvard undergraduates to spot visual targets on a computer screen and to press a button as soon as they were certain that they had seen one. At first, it might take about 400 milliseconds for a target to reach the student's consciousness. But with an hour or so of practice, they could reliably see the targets much faster. For example, at the end of training, a student might accurately press a button in 75 milliseconds. Students who are trained to do this task and are retested from 3 to 12 hours later on the same day show absolutely no improvement in speed beyond their best time at the end of training. And the students who sleep 6 hours or less after training also show no improvement when they perform the same task the next day. Only those who sleep more than 6 hours seem to improve the next day. The students who improved the most slept for 8 hours, during which they had at least 1 2-hour period of deep, slow-wave sleep at the beginning of their sleep period. During this period, information flows out of a region of the hippocampus and into the cortex. Then the brain has 4-hour dialogue with itself that distributes this new information into the appropriate networks and categories. During this period, protein synthesis begins to strengthen connections between nerve cells that have newly acquired information. Their last 2 hours were spent in rapid eye movement, or REM sleep, when vivid dreams occur. The hippocampus is shut off from the cortex as the brain literally reenacts the training and solidifies the newly made connections throughout the memory banks. This is yet another reason why information retained for a couple hours after staying up all night, cramming, will not be retained long. Of course, most people don't have enough control over their lives, especially their work lives, to be able to sleep 8 hours a night no matter what. And the stress of powerlessness is yet another fact in poor cognitive performance. Linda Carroll wrote this in the February 1 issue of the New York Times, Quote, large population studies have implicated stress in memory loss. A 10-year MacArthur Foundation study found that self-efficacy, along with physical and mental activity, predicted good memory in old age. Said Dr. Marilyn S. Albert, professor of psychiatry and neurology at Harvard, what we called self-efficacy has to do with people's sense of control over their lives, whether they feel they can do something to influence what happens in their daily lives. This general feeling of control we can think of as some sort of anti-stress. So far, laboratory researchers have looked only at the effects of short-term stress, which appears not to be permanent. In our animal model of stress, you can largely reverse the effects of stress as long as it hasn't gone on for a number of weeks, says Dr. McEwen of Rockefeller University. And this is actually a kind of gray area. We don't know yet how long it would take before you would produce permanent brain damage with stress. But most likely, it's the kind of stress experienced by a person at the low end of the totem pole, in a meaningless job, in a lousy environment, with bad interpersonal relations. Dr. McEwen said it comes from a sense of hopelessness, helplessness, despair, and depression. So, folks, we got to fight the power for the sake of our brain. This is not just a matter of high-tech science and psychopharmacology and all the expensive stuff that capitalist medicine can bring us. It's also a matter of fighting the power. And in fact, you may need to literally fight the power in order to save your brain's health and even your life. Since researchers at the University of North Carolina think electromagnetic fields from electric utility wires decreases levels of melatonin and that this may cause depression and suicide. In a study reported in the Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine, they compared levels of exposure to magnetic fields and the rate of suicide among more than 5,000 electrical workers and an equal number of other men. Apparently, electrical workers commit suicide at twice the rate of other workers, and researchers suspect that this is linked to electromagnetic fields and their possible effect on the brain chemical, melatonin. Melatonin is linked to a variety of functions in the body, including sleep, hunger, sexual desire, and mood. So we can put this there right next to the cell phone debate about whether cell phone causes brain cancer and et cetera, and all the other things that are whizzing through the air invisibly around us. The American Academy of Neurology has started a webzine called NeuroVista for the dissemination of the latest information on brain health. It's at www.aan.com/NeuroVista. Articles that are now online there include research on brain health and optimism, on faith, alternative medical therapies, and the neurology of reading. You're listening to Dr. J. We're talking about the brain today. And in the background, I've got two things that I'm kind of phasing in and out on. One is Throne of Drones from the Sambient Collection. The other is 5,000 Spirits from Mesmeric Revelation. Or rather, I think it's Mesmeric Revelation from 5,000 Spirits. One or the other. Ambient noise for the brain show. You listen to Change Surfer Radio. This is from the AP Wire. Christopher Reeve, the paraplegic who once dreamed in the Superman film, actually he's a quadriplegic, who once acted in the Superman films, wants the federal law to stop banning government funding of research involving human embryos. While we prolong the stem cell debate, millions continue to suffer. It's time to harness the power of government and go forward. Reeve, who was paralyzed in a 1995 horse riding accident, was quoted in Time magazine saying this. Researchers believe they can learn how to use the cells culled from human embryos to make body parts or to find new therapies for Alzheimer's and other diseases. But the use of the cells has generated opposition from anti-abortion forces, boo, and some members of Congress who say that the cells are covered by the federal law. Reeve said such research should be funded and supervised by the federal government through the National Institutes of Health. That will avoid abuses by for-profit corporations, avoid secrecy and destructive competition between laboratories, and ensure the widest possible dissemination of scientific breakthroughs. Now, who would have thought that Superman would come through and be a socialist? Just imagine that. He says that federally funded research should be at the forefront because it would avoid abuses by for-profit corporations, like, for instance, doing genetic therapy on people who shouldn't have it done on them so that they die on the table, which has recently happened. Avoid secrecy and destructive competition between laboratories, so that doesn't happen. And ensure the widest possible dissemination of scientific breakthroughs, such as not patenting all the human genome so that no one can get access to it. Superman, I'm right there beside you. French doctor sponsored by the European Union-sponsored Stand Up and Walk Research Project. Now, here's a good example of federally funded research, in this case the Federation being the European Union, are having success with getting the paralyzed to walk again by wiring the muscles of paraplegics' legs with stimulators and hooking these to a computer chip. Patients walk by pressing buttons on a walking frame, which acts as a remote control for the chip, sending impulses through fine wires to stimulate leg muscles. Doctors who carried out the operation in the southeastern city of Montpellier say they have not repaired the patient's injury, and the system would only work for paraplegics whose muscles had remained alive despite damage to their nerves. Concerns over the safety of traditional walking frames have led scientists to design a robotic version. Elderly people with walking problems could soon benefit from an electronic frame which acts as a second pair of eyes and legs, audibly warning the user of impending collisions. The personal adaptive mobility robot also tells people when they come to a junction or if they're about to encounter a door. The prototype, developed by computer scientists at Trinity College Dublin, uses lasers and sonar sensors to guide the robotically steered wheels. The laser rangefinder has a 180-degree sweep, and when it is unreliable, such as in the case of a pair of glass doors, six sonar sensors take over. It can be used in two modes. Manual acts as a standard walking frame but issues audible warnings, while aggressive actually controls the steering and navigates safely around obstacles. That's what I want when I'm old and sickly. Actually, I want my body to work fine when I'm old and sickly, but that's a different matter. This is a paraphrase report from the magazine Salon, which you can find online at www.salon.com. Kevin Warwick, the British cybernetician, is planning a follow-up to his experiment where he inserted a computer chip and radio transmitter in his arm to communicate with his building. In 18 months, Warwick will again undergo surgery, this time receiving not just a transponder implant in his arm, but a connection to his nervous core, a tiny collar that encircles the bundle of nerve fibers at the top of his arm, reading the signals from his nervous system and transmitting those to his computer. Of course, just how his nervous signals will translate into computer commands remains to be seen. Much of the experiment will involve testing to see if he can turn on lights on his computer by waving his arm in certain ways. This implant will not merely send signals to his computer, however, it will also receive them. The computer should be able to record and store sets of Warwick's nervous signals and transmit them back at a later time. If all goes well, he'll be able to play back the motion of flexing his elbow or wiggling his fingers. He could even re-experience the nervous signals related to his emotions, playing back the signals his nervous core sent when he was feeling happy or stressed. When I feel the emotion I felt before, will I feel a different one? Will it be better? Or will it be worse? We have no idea, he speculates. The big worry is that while we'll be able to see what those transmissions will do to my fingers, what will they do to my brain? What will my brain make of those signals? That's a smidgen dangerous, but it's extremely exciting. In the most bizarre touch of all, Warwick's wife has agreed to receive an identical implant. The two human lab rats, he hopes, should be able to transmit signals from nervous system to nervous system. Conceivably, Warwick's feelings of anger or amorousness could be transmitted to her and vice versa. Now that's what I call cyborg love. Yong Huang and Boris Rubinsky of the University of California at Berkeley have described, and they're Chinese and Russian scientists, so hopefully love there as well, have described a bionic chip that they have built in the journal Biomedical Microdevices. The chip is a sandwich that traps a cell within three layers of silicon. The cell acts to complete an electrical circuit and can be altered, perhaps to add a new gene or some chemicals as part of the process. The chip grips the cell, opening and closing it with an electrical current to open its pores, a process called electroporation, simply enough. Then new genes or chemicals can be inserted and the cell can be released. One of the weaknesses of gene therapy, which attempts to use viruses to go around and infect cells with new genes in order to treat diseases, is that it's hard to make sure that all the cells actually absorb new genes. The new process might make it easier to ensure that genes get into cells. Jing Kong and colleagues have published a paper in the January issue of Science that suggests that molecular-sized tubes may someday be used as sensors in nanomachines. The sensors are made from single molecule-thick carbon nanotubes. Upon exposure to gaseous molecules, such as NO2 or NH3, the electrical resistance of semiconducting switches is found to dramatically increase or decrease. The nanotube sensors exhibit a fast response and a substantially higher sensitivity than existing solid-state sensors at room temperature. Unfortunately, to get them to go back, it requires either slow recovery under ambient conditions, it says, or heating to high temperatures, so not exactly something that you want to have happening in your body or your brain. Curigen Corporation of New Haven, Connecticut, supported by the National Institutes of Health, has been able to build a robotic system that illuminates the process of intercellular communication. They've used robots to monitor the goings-on, not micro-robots, unfortunately, but robots nonetheless, to monitor the goings-on of thousands of individual baker's yeast cells growing on a small plastic grid. Without an automated approach, the job of looking one by one for all the physical contacts among the protein products of thousands of genes in a yeast cell would be painstakingly slow. Yeast cells share an extraordinary number of important similarities with more highly evolved species, including humans. And from Boston University, Timothy Gardner has published a paper in Nature that demonstrates their invention of a genetic toggle switch. The switch is sensitive to the presence of specific chemicals and heat changes. The switch was built from genetic material from the E. coli and is linked to a jellyfish gene that makes a green fluorescent protein. By changing the temperature or introducing chemical triggers, they were able to switch the gene on and off. An application being worked on now is a sensor for diabetics' blood, engineered to change color when their glucose gets out of whack. Eventually, the technology could lead to the development of an artificial pancreas, a package of cells that would secrete insulin automatically in response to sensor readings, and many other applications. Princeton University researchers have been able to solve a 100-bit string equation using an RNA-based computer. Strands of RNA containing 1,024 base pairs were encoded with every possible solution to a specific chess problem. Ribonuclease digestion progressively narrowed down the possible solutions until only one of the 43 correct solutions, plus, unfortunately, one incorrect one, remained. Molecules can store more information than silicon chips, and this was the largest problem ever solved by a molecular computer using either RNA or DNA. DNA had been the method of choice of previous molecular-based computing. A team at IBM Research in Zurich and the University of Basel in Switzerland, publishing in Science, reports that they have made DNA strings bend tiny silicon fingers that have a thickness of 1/50th of a human hair. They rigged up a system of these tiny cantilevers, anchored at one end and free to bend up and down at the other, and glued tiny strands of DNA onto the top. DNA normally forms a double helix like a twisted ladder, and when cut apart will naturally try to put itself back together again. When the researchers put their cantilevers into a solution with the missing halves of the DNA strands, the pairs zip themselves together and the little cantilevers bent under the force. The movement could be used to see genetic variations in DNA, such as a mutation, but could also itself be harnessed to do work, the researchers said. Biomechanical technique has the potential to enable fast and cheap biochemical analysis and could be used for mobile applications. The same technology could look for active proteins being produced by cells, including those the body produces during disease or after an injury such as a heart attack. The device might be used to open a valve, perhaps to deliver drugs in precise doses right where they're needed in the body. For instance, a nanorobot could be programmed chemically to release a chemotherapy only when they get biochemical signals from the targeted tumor type. This would enable the right therapy at the right place at the right time, with minimized side effects and no invasive surgery. So hopefully, all of this medical research is going to have some impact on our longevity, our brain health, our quality of life in the next couple decades. And I look forward to sharing it with you. This has been Jay Hughes, Dr. Jay, Change Surfer Radio. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com.